It's 9 o'clock. Why don't we go ahead and call roll and get started? If you please call the roll.
Senator Aquino. Representative Davidsmeyer. Senator DeWitt. Representative Harper. Representative Hernandez. Senator Kaler. Representative McLaughlin. Representative Moeller. Representative Senator Sims.
Present.
Representative Sosnowski. Senator Stoler. Senator Severson.
And he is here. You got Senator DeWitt as well. We got both of you. So,
5 present.
And what is a quorum? 7. Okay. All right. Don't have a quorum yet, but Clayton, you wanted to have an extra piece of agenda item that's not on the agenda, so go ahead.
Yes. Before we get to the actual group insurance meeting, just to start for the audio record, I am Clayton Klanke, Executive Director of the Commission. Before we get to the group insurance meeting, I just wanted to briefly address the members on the topic of the Facility Closures Act. Yesterday, I sent around some information via email, and that's also included in your binders that you have in front of you today. In relation to the Facility Closures Act and the governor's recent announcement to close and rebuild the Stateville Correctional Center and the Logan Correctional Center, between 2000 and 2012, the facility closure hearings were a common occurrence for our commission. We had over 20 different closure announcements during that time frame. More recently, the closure hearings have been rare, with the last hearing occurring in 2016. The recent announcements related to Stateville and Logan have set in place the requirements for the Closure Act, and that act specifically requires hearings for the closure of certain types of facilities, including correctional centers. The timelines in the act are outlined in the material in your binders. Depending on when the Department of Corrections provides the statutorily required information to COGFA, our commission will be required to hold hearings within 35 days of the receipt of that information. So this time frame would basically require us to have our hearings during the month of May. The statute requires a hearing within 25 miles of each of the impacted facilities, and then we would also be looking at an initial hearing probably in Springfield to begin receiving the public testimony from IDOC. After these informal hearings, a brief meeting will also occur for our commission members to take a vote on an advisory opinion concerning the closure plans. During this hearing process, the Act provides that the administration cannot take action to implement the proposed closures. Given the May session calendar, there are not very many choices to schedule these hearings on session days that are not session days. In the past, these hearings have been scheduled during the day, at night, and sometimes even on the weekends to get the hearings in during our statutorily required time frames. If you have any questions related to the briefing documents that our staff put together, our staff would be available to answer those. If you have any suggestions, please don't hesitate to reach out with any questions or comments. I would just mention that if you have any specific questions at this time, I can answer those, or we can begin the group insurance meeting.
Is there any questions? So we'll try to squeeze that in at some point then.
Yes.
All right. And yes, Senator DeWitt.
Thank you for that update. At these hearings that are held, the public will have an opportunity to present their positions on what the local impacts may be.
So we will have a hearing within 25 miles of each of the facilities, and the locals will have panels for the locals, local elected official, local employees, our members of the community will have an opportunity to testify.
All public hearings.
Right, and that's why we will also look at having an initial hearing probably in Springfield to try to get some of that testimony from IDOC out of the way so that those hearings in the local communities don't go too long. In the past, some of these hearings have, you know, they've averaged, I think, 4 or 5 hours, some much longer than that even.
Any other questions, comments? All right, let's move to the order of the day, which is overview of the group insurance program for 2025. We have the first panel. If you want to take your seat. And as you get ready to speak, if you'd introduce yourself. I'll just mention that the House is not in session today, although we are expecting maybe a couple of members of the House to be here for this meeting. But welcome.
I'll start again. Good morning. My name is Raven Devine. I have the pleasure of serving as Director of the Illinois Department of Central Management Services. Thank you, Co-Chair Kaler, and members of the Commission. CMS has a pivotal role in delivering essential support services to a broad spectrum of stakeholders, including state agencies, boards, and commissions. Among our most critical responsibilities is the provision of comprehensive health care coverage, extending to employees and their eligible dependents within the state of Illinois government and university systems, including retirees and annuitants. Our commitment to ensuring robust health services underscores our dedication to the well-being and vitality of our workforce and our broader community. CMS oversees healthcare administration and management portfolio covering more than 450,000 lives, implemented across 10 distinct carriers. We are consistently working to provide holistic support that improves the physical, mental, and financial well-being of our residents, employees, and retirees of the state, while at the same time optimizing operational burden and taxpayer costs. Under the leadership of Governor Pritzker and with the support of the General Assembly, CMS has worked to minimize the ever-growing costs of health care while maintaining top-tier services to our members. Through collective bargaining efforts, strategic contract negotiations, and implementation of industry-leading program designs, CMS has saved over $1.9 billion through cost containment and diligent cash management since 2019. As a result, from 2019 to 2023, the average annual liability increase for the program was -0.2%. Whereas typical healthcare trends range from 5 to 7%. As a result, the average annual liability over the same time frame increase for the program was negative. These achievements demonstrate our commitment to fiscal responsibility and sustainable healthcare management. As we navigate through the challenges of rising costs and heightened demands for expanded coverage, CMS remains focused on our mission of delivering excellent healthcare while controlling costs as much as the market will allow. For example, the recently awarded Vision contract is expected to reduce annual costs by 19.2%. While balancing fiscal responsibility, our overarching commitment is to holistic well-being through our robust wellness programming and strong preventative health care offerings. Some of the innovative and impactful programs spearheaded by CMS include the Be Well Illinois program, a nationally recognized and award-winning employer-led comprehensive health initiative, which includes a focus on preventative exams, such as the colon cancer screening program, now in its third year. In 2023, over 3,500 test kits were mailed to eligible members with a return rate of 14%. Well above the industry standard 6%. The return kits resulted in a 5% positivity rate. This early detection could save lives and lessen the need for intense treatment, resulting in an additional $56 million in cost avoidance. Whether CMS is supporting employee engagement or restructuring health plan contracts, our collective efforts resulted in significant cost savings for the state. We are committed to continuing our efforts to provide effective, cost-efficient, and quality service to all the employees and plan members we serve in the future. I would like to thank you for your ongoing support, and I look forward to working with the members of this commission. Today, I'm joined by Chief Financial Officer Karen Pate in the galley, Deputy Director of CMS Bureau of Benefits to my left, Carrie Wolf, and Benefits Finance Manager Colin Brewer to my right. We're happy to take your questions.
Questions? Senator Searson, please add Representative Davis-Meyer to the roll.
Welcome. Good morning. I'm not sure where to start here, but let's go through a couple different issues in on the benefits. One of the things I noticed was, and maybe the first question, the active membership. It looks like on page 12 of the booklet, active membership is up over 6,000 lives in the last 2 years. Is that, have we really grown that much?
Well, as a workforce, we're growing.
For the state of Illinois employees, yes.
Correct.
So we've added 6,000 new?
Well, that wouldn't necessarily be employees. That could be their dependents as well. So.
No, this is active members, not dependents. It says active members have grown from 95,000 to 101,000. Is that correct?
That is correct. Colin Brewer, benefits finance manager. Thanks for the question. The part of that number that you're referencing is not just the amount of employees that have been added to the roles in the recent years, but that's also my projection of continued enrollment growth in the program based on the activities of the agency's hiring initiatives. So we are expecting continued employee growth over the next year as well.
Okay. Then let's, we talked about minimizing costs or costs being down. Obviously, using 2019 as a nice benchmark because of the whole issue of COVID when that reduced utilization. But let's talk about the proposed increase this year. 16%? 16.5%? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that would be the largest increase in health care costs in recent times. Is that?
In my memory, yes, it is.
And we compare that to our surrounding states, that the increases were all in the single digits. What is the driving factor that's causing this massive increase?
So I'll start. A lot of it, incredible inflationary pressures from the healthcare field.
Other states don't seeing this. So unless it's unique just Illinois, why is Illinois at 16% in all of our surrounding states and single-digit increases this year?
There's no secret we have a Cadillac plan. Over the last 3 years, we saw normal or traditional increases of between 5 and 9%. This year, between mandates from the General Assembly and, quite frankly, our carriers kind of coming in at some point, some as many as 40% increases, and we negotiated that down. Those were unheard of numbers. It was shocking, to say the least. However, it's been consistent across our carriers, an extremely large increase across the board as it relates to state of Illinois coverage.
The mandates, and again, we warned about this over and over and over again the last couple of years, that actions have consequences. And when we continue to push these mandates, there's a cost to that. So is there a way to determine how much of this increase it was due to the legislative mandates that have been added the last couple of years?
So based on this year, we're showing $324 million, and if I get off track here, Colin, correct me, $324 million increase as it relates to inflationary pressures driven mainly by two programs. Two of our HMO programs, and then our open access plan. The remaining $210 million is a result of mandated coverage from the General Assembly.
The amount that's attributed to the new mandates that have been passed the last couple of years is how much?
excuse me, the figure the director was referencing was specifically for mandates that affect the upcoming budget year. We would actually have to go back and do a little bit more research to be able to provide you with costs over historic time periods. We typically project those for the purposes of communicating with the General Assembly when a bill is in motion. But on the back end, we haven't really gone back and looked at what the costs of those, but we'd be happy to look at that for you.
Okay. Because clearly, if we're seeing a half a billion dollar increase, 16% increase, compared to all of our surrounding states that aren't any different than we are, that saw single digits, it's clearly an indicator of what the actions of this legislature have done with mandates. And I guess the other side note is those mandates are not just increasing the cost to the Illinois taxpayers for this plan, but it means every small employer in Illinois is being hit with those same mandates and are feeling those same pains that we're feeling right now. So there's consequences when the legislature continues to add mandates. This year, we've got a slew of new mandates that have been introduced. Has there been any estimate or talk about what the impact's going to be on all the new mandates that have been introduced for this year?
Hi, Carrie Wolf, Deputy Director for Bureau of Benefits. Yeah, whenever we get a bill that is sent to us to review, we do a financial impact on each one of those bills. We do not. I don't have a overall cost of what all of those are, but there are some that we have provided information on that are quite costly.
Can we then let's talk about the utilization management, you know, like step therapy. Are we applying or do we have utilization management or step therapies in place currently in the program?
Generally, yes. Across, are you talking about a specific program?
We could talk about prescription drugs if we want. Are we applying utilization management tools?
At present, yes.
Okay. Now, the governor has talked about eliminating that. Do we have an idea of what that would do to the costs if we eliminated that tool for under the prescription program?
So we put together a range of kind of options and modeling in terms of a total elimination or whether or not there is a program management portion, like there are levels to the step therapy. We have put together our best efforts in terms of modeling where we land or where the legislation lands. Certainly, we understand the importance of managing the program as appropriately for our members, but also a little bit tighter to ensure that what we have mandated or what we have placed upon us is appropriate to supporting the medical needs of the folks we serve.
So does that mean that we're going to be adding more utilization review, or are we talking about eliminating that? I guess I wasn't quite clear on what you're trying to say.
So whenever we do a bill review, as Carrie mentioned, we will go through and say, if this, then that. And so based on what we had put in front of us, we put together a projected cost. We also put together different sort of management tools, whether or not there are levels to step therapy. There is really strict, and then along the continuum.
Okay. And do we know with what you're looking at doing, what that is going to result in? I mean, in the report on page 5, we talk about our estimated prescription cost increase is at 35%, where the trend is 9%. Obviously, Illinois is doing something different compared to 49 other states. What's driving that increase in that liability?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the prescription drug market is a very complex and expensive component of what we deal with. And you're correct. We have seen significant cost increases, especially within the specialty drug sector of our prescription spend. And don't quote me, I'm trying to remember, but I think for all of our self-insured plans, specialty drugs represent about 1.6% of our prescriptions that are written, yet it represents just a little bit over 50% of our drug spend. Those continue to see very large increases in terms of the number of drugs that fall into that category that become available on the market and the prices that we have to pay for those drugs. Even in the non-specialty world, all of those autoimmune drugs that you hear about, like the Humiras, always number one on the top of the list. It's very highly utilized. It's a very expensive drug. So while the underlying cost of drug prices might be at, you know, an 8 or a 9%, which is actually a little bit higher than what we had seen in recent years, utilization drives total dollar spend quite a bit. And in addition to, as the director mentioned, the mandated prescription coverages that we're facing are really a big component of what's driving that 36%.
Okay, because we're over three times higher than that every other state. That's a significant number. And is that attributed to, the only thing I can attribute that to is going to be the mandated expanded coverages that we have, I would guess, compared to other states. So is there any other reason why our trend is three times higher than the national average?
Again, like I said, I think our underlying trend in terms of, you know, if you're reading a report about what other states are facing, they may be saying that they're looking at an 8 or a 9% drug cost increase, but they're probably also facing additional pressures such as we are, because that underlying number is just one component of what's driving the overall dollar spend. So I'd say that our underlying costs are not that much different, but we're facing additional problems. Like I said, utilization of specialty is a huge one. Just looking at a recent report with one of our vendors the other day, that our average drug cost is not that much different, maybe 3/4 to 1% greater than their book of business. But our utilization rates are 6 to 8% higher depending on the drug category. So while the cost of the drug might not be there, the utilization that we see is there, and that's driving the overall spend along with all those other factors that I referenced.
So if utilization increases because we have a sicker population, for example, than the industry trend, that's 8 or 9%. But I guess how do we get to 36%? Unless that is that again due to the mandated additional prescription coverages that we have that's not being covered by others?
That is correct. As the director mentioned, we're facing an expected prescription drug increase of almost $210 million in the budget year.
Okay.
Excuse me. Please add Representative Hernandez to the roll.
And a couple more questions. On the have any of these changes had any impact on the trail program, or is that, how are those costs working out compared to what was estimated?
No, that does not impact that. The TRAIL program is a Medicare-based program. This mandate would not be subject to the Medicare federal regulations, so that did not impact that group.
Okay, so there's no internal increases or any changes. Any vendors attempted to break or request any modification to their contracts at all?
We at least on the Medicare component, we won't really know what happens with that until in August when the final federal regulations come out. So we don't have any indication at this exact moment of where that would potentially be.
Okay. Then I think maybe last question. The cost differential, we implemented, and thank you for doing that, an HSA option a year ago, or maybe 2 years ago now it's been implemented, which is a significant savings. Are we doing anything to educate employees or to try to get more movement or migration into HSAs versus these other plans? I mean, if I'm looking at these numbers right, it's about $25,000 a year less for a family of four to be in an HSA versus a PPO or a HMO plan.
So the one thing that we've been able to do since COVID restrictions were lifted was to actually be in person with our open enrollment events to be able to actually talk to folks when they have questions about what's the best plan for their family. I can tell you, I think the HSA is a really smart program. I think it scares and intimidates a lot of folks who are just used to, I'm going to choose my HMO and just kind of go along that. I was raised in an HMO my whole life, and it wasn't until I said, well, wait, I got to pay for these things. What makes sense for my life as a single woman versus woman with a family, et cetera? So the in-person aspects of our open enrollment is, I think, really helpful to extol what's right for each family. We also have amazing partners who are able to help us, and they're here today. Folks have questions, they can call in. We have a very quick answer-to-call ratio, so they have time to talk through it. Have we launched a campaign to say, hey, join the HSA program? No. But I think that with the build-out of our ability to reach folks directly and extol some of the different options for their family and answer questions in real time has helped explain some of the options available to our members.
Can we incentivize more by lowering the employee cost for the HSA? I mean, the state is saving thousands of dollars a year for each person that goes into the HSA. Would it make sense
to take...
That's
a federal rule? Let me...
No, the premiums.
Oh, the premiums. Oh.
The premiums that you're charging, can't those be... Can't some of that significant savings be used to incentivize the cost which people are looking at to steer more to the HSA?
Yes, when we implemented the high deductible HSA plan back in fiscal year 2021, I believe it was, we did sit down with our largest collective bargaining partner and to negotiate what those premiums were going to be, knowing that we did expect it to be a lower cost plan. We did negotiate member and dependent premiums that were significantly lower than our HMO, PPO, and OAP plans.
Yeah, I mean, it's not significantly lower. It's lower currently, but still the state is saving thousands and thousands of dollars in premium. If you lowered that premium even further, the state would be coming out significantly ahead. I mean, we're not talking about millions. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of savings by having a large segment of the population in an HSA, which is certainly has all the tax advantages that it would bring with it, and which is even better. But whose decision is it, or can it be looked at to try more aggressively lower or incentivize that HSA to get more people moving into that program?
Well, we have recently completed the most recent round of bargaining with APSME, where the majority of all our program provisions come from. So that is now set. within the terms of that agreement, but we do have an opportunity from time to time to meet with them. We have a joint labor wellness committee where we continually discuss ongoing items that may be problems within the program or opportunities that we can look towards. So that would probably be the avenue that we would take to maybe renew those conversations to see if there could be something done.
Okay, thank you. Just to wrap it up, on a positive note, Optum is, I think, a very easy company to work with, and their HSA program seems to be easily utilized. And the ease of being able to move your HSA balance into an investment opportunity, again, is, I think, one of the better programs that I've seen. So kudos to the implementing that program, because I think that does, again, if people understood it and actually utilized it, it would be another a tool for employees to be able to utilize. So thank you. I appreciate your time answering questions.
Thank you for that feedback.
Further questions? Yes, Representative.
So I kind of want to follow up really quick on a few things the senator was discussing. As you look at the impact going forward of proposed legislation, we know where the governor stands. Have you had discussions on how the governor sees these programs playing out? Because you said you'll look at if and then. Obviously, the governor has an idea of how he sees these new rules being implemented. So do you have direct discussions with the administration on how his plan will be implemented to know exactly how it will affect the state of Illinois?
So when bills come in, we don't know exactly how they're going to come out. We've just got to be prepared for however the chips fall. Certainly, we have a pretty robust process in that we assess it, we give what we think might be what the bill intends versus what might what we think might be a better path for us holistically. That doesn't always happen. That happens very rarely, as a matter of fact, but our job is to be prepared to execute the legislation as it comes out. We certainly have assessed mostly anything that touches CMS. We assess, we give our feedback, but certainly we are prepared to administer the programs as the legislations are filed and ultimately become law.
Okay. The huge increases that we're seeing in our health care, are we, is it because of enrollment? Is it because of mandates? Do you have an idea of where the cost is actually coming from?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I wouldn't, enrollment is a, you know, I get beat up tomorrow, I'll be getting beat up about hiring. So if we've got higher enrollment, that's a good problem to have if you're sitting in my position. But inflation is real. I think, when I talk to my counterparts across the country, they are saying they're feeling this too. I don't know what their plan looks like. They just say, oh, it's increasing. But I don't know what their offerings are. I don't know what their plan looks like. So for me to assess, I just know they're feeling the pressure. We have broken it down to say about $324 million is just underlying inflation and increased health care costs. Mandates are $210 million.
So are we talking about, you say $325 million of the additional, what, $490 million of additional cost is just inflation?
Well, that's...
Go ahead. Sure. In terms of the total program liability, we're actually projecting an overall increase of about $534 million. So $324 of that is from just the general inflationary pressures that we're feeling in the program, and the $210 the director mentioned was from the mandate.
Okay.
Just a small clarification, that 490 is GRF.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're
Thank
not
you.
Wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah.
That's a lot of times that's what I am mostly concerned about. But no, I appreciate the you clarifying that. Yeah, I just as we force these increases in the state of Illinois, and we are forcing increases in costs, it impacts businesses and the people of Illinois who are not state employees that much more, because not only are they going to have to make sure to pay the taxes to cover the state employees, but they're going to have to pay that much more for their personal. So they're getting double whammied. I hope that we can step back from this, step back from the mandates, and understand the overall impact that has. And I'm not directing this at you. I'm just saying, making a statement that we need to look at the actual impact on what this is doing to healthcare, and not pretend like it's just naturally occurring, because we are forcing this increased cost. So, thank you.
Further questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now proceed to looking at the renewed contracts. First panel, who would come forward? Please identify yourself and proceed.
Okay, sorry. Kevin Canoon with TELUS Health, Vice President. I'm here today to talk about, first of all, thank you for inviting me, this commission, and we appreciate the opportunity to serve the employees and retirees of the state of Illinois. We provide the enrollment and eligibility engine for your employees and your retirees to enroll. So we're the technology solution. We're also a component of the customer service. We make sure that all your members and retirees that enroll in benefits each year get to all the carriers that are here today and to all your payroll agencies to make sure our retiree deductions or payroll deductions are correct. So very simply, we provide services for those 450,000 eligible members. So we do provide also support to your group insurance representatives. We have a customer service line where we service them and support them. We also, when your members call in, as the director said, we provide advice and counseling on enrollment into the benefit programs to ensure that they get enrolled in the best benefit package they have. And that's what I have today. I'm open for any questions you have. Try to keep it straight and simple.
Questions?
So you operate the... So do you operate the website then in servicing the web? I mean, you control the website, that's all.
Yes, we control the website where you enroll each year for your benefits.
Okay. And the ongoing My Benefits website, when you go to look up information, that's all operated by yourself, right?
Correct. So the phone number and the website is all operated by TELUS Health, our representatives, and we work with the CMS team during each of the enrollments, whether it's benefit choice or the trail enrollment, to update the website. And we also participate in the benefit fairs with each respective group. So we're on site, and we actually can enroll people on site.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And we'll have panel two come up. It's Blue Cross Blue Shield, Health Alliance, and Aetna. At the end of that, we will have some motions to actually approve. So we do have a quorum right now if everybody is able to stay put. So welcome, and I don't know which order you're going to go in, but please introduce yourself and proceed.
They always say ladies first, but thank you, gentlemen. I'm Sinead Rice Madigan. I'm the CEO and President of Health Alliance. I've been with Health Alliance for 16 years, and Health Alliance has been a vendor with the state of Illinois for over 40.
Good morning. I'm John Stockton with Aetna, 25 years.
Bob Miller from Blue Cross Blue Shield, Vice President, 35 years.
And what questions do we have for the panel? Do you have any statements you want to make?
Yes, on Aetna's behalf, thank you for the opportunity to provide responses on behalf of Aetna and our members. We value our long-term partnership with the State of Illinois. Aetna's relationship with the State of Illinois Group Insurance Program began over 40 years ago as an HMO plan offered to state employees. Currently, we are serving the program through the HMO contract, an open access contract, PPO contract, and the MAPD PPO contract. Today, Aetna has a privilege of serving approximately 262,500 State of Illinois members and retirees today, comprised of over 10,000 HMO total enrolled members, over 41,500 OAP enrolled members, and over 45,000 PPO enrolled members, and over 166,000 total enrolled, respectively.
Health Alliance serves the 65,000 state employees and their families. As I said, we've been doing that for over 40 years. We are privileged to provide that high-quality health care to your members and to some of you, as well as providing the broadest network that we can in collaboration with our providers throughout our broad network. And we're offered in 96 counties. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Sinead. So Blue Cross Blue Shield has been in business here in the state of Illinois for 80 years, longtime carrier for sure, off and on with different coverages for the state of Illinois, but most recently the HMO has been coverage through the state of Illinois employees for over 20 years, and the OAP plan we're offering since 2021.
Brandon, you mentioned about the retirees, and we had some meetings last year talking about retiree issues. How has that gone? I have certainly noticed that there's less noise in amongst my constituency. Has that pretty well been resolved in terms of some of the issues?
Yeah, certainly no issues from our perspective, but I'll defer to Bonnie if we want to call out for here as well.
Okay. No, that's fine. We can talk about that later. Any questions for the? Yes, Senator Webb.
Thank you, Chairman. I want to circle back a little bit, and maybe this question ought to have been asked to the previous panel. But you know, HMO's mission in the insurance industry, as I understand it, is basically to keep costs down in order to keep expenses down and premiums down, and everything goes along with it. There was a discussion earlier about mandated prescription drugs. And our research shows that there was approximately $210 million. That's nearly a quarter of $1 billion. I'm not sure if it's been appropriated, but it was anticipated that that would be the cost for something as simple as what were described in the legislation that was inserted into the BIMP last year. It was not a mandated piece of legislation. For weight loss injectables. I know a lot of carriers have started differentiating because a lot of these drugs are actually prescribed for different reasons. Most of the weight loss drugs are prescribed for diabetes control. But my doctor tells me the vast majority of prescriptions for these weight loss injectables, 70% is the number he quotes, are prescribed specifically for weight loss. I know there are some carriers who have stopped compensating or covering these particular drugs that are very expensive. They're not as bad as Humiris or some of the other more significant medications, but certainly they are not cheap. How are the HMOs handling those types of drugs where they are designed for one specific medical purpose, but in reality are being used significantly for other reasons? How are the HMOs dealing with that particular issue?
Yeah, we have similar control mechanisms in place, from pre-certification just to make sure they're taken for the intended use, step therapy types of programs that are certainly available that we monitor that very closely.
Okay, so you're with Aetna?
Yes.
So Aetna does not reimburse for weight loss injectables?
We have programs to assure like the appropriate use of those medicines.
What is the appropriate use of those medicines?
So I can't speak to the clinical criteria. We could follow up with you on that information if you like, but there's clinical criteria that we put in place to make sure they're taken for the intended use.
Okay. So do you reimburse for those injectables that are being prescribed purely for weight loss?
We can if the clinical criteria is met.
Okay. How about Blue Cross and...
Great. Thank you, Sinead Health Alliance. We currently do not cover weight loss medications. We don't cover weight loss except for bariatric surgery today. As a vendor for the state of Illinois beginning July 1st, we will follow that statutory requirement that you noted was in the BIMP bill. We do cover, and we have about, and I sent this information to state CMS last week, so let me get this, around 3,500 people who are a state employee who is diagnosed as a diabetic who may access those GLP-1s that may also be used for weight loss. So GLP-1 is a clinical component, technical word for that. Again, I'm not clinical, so I will also share that. But we do cover GLP-1s that are also sometimes utilized for weight loss for those who are diagnosed with diabetes.
Based on clinical diagnoses.
Package insert for the drug, for example. They have a certain BMI.
Okay.
So utilization management step therapy would follow with that.
And I get it. So why, you know, there could be a hundred reasons why it's a good drug for someone other than just diabetes control.
Yeah, so for Blue Cross Blue Shield, the HMO program is a fully insured program, and our providers do manage the care according to the efficacy of the drugs that are utilized. So we would cover according to the pre-certification, the authorization that is appropriate for the different care that's needed.
Okay.
So we do cover them depending on the efficacy of the drug.
Okay, very good. $210 million, that's almost a quarter of $1 billion of over half $1 billion in increased costs this year. I would hope that our carriers can help kind of put some brackets on some of those numbers, mandates or otherwise, legislative mandates or otherwise, as you described it. If the carriers are making a differentiation, I don't know why we shouldn't be doing the same thing. And I guess I would look to the carriers themselves to give the various insurance departments within the state some help with, you know, these are the specific reasons we will pay for weight loss injectables as opposed to diabetes only. I guess if the legislature is going to take free rein with it, then we have to find other ways to help find people to help us put some controls on those as well. And I'm hoping that the carriers are in a position to want to do that. I think in the long run, it probably is in the best interest of everyone. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Chairman.
Since we're going to be asked to approve the renewal of the contracts, can you talk about just what changes are made in the new contract? Are there changes?
We implement the bill, or the bill, I'm sorry. We implement the benefit design in accordance with the requirements of the union and the management's negotiations. So I believe, and CMS may be able to clarify this, but I think there was very nominal changes overall, maybe in one copay. And then, of course, the GLP-1s for weight loss, which was included in the mandate, the legislation, and then any other mandates that occur because we are fully insured HMOs that are dictated or guided by the state Illinois Department of Insurance regulations.
Yeah, similar response from Aetna's perspective. I could bring Bonnie up to get into the details if you'd like, but mostly mandate driven.
Yes, and Blue Cross Blue Shield does cover the pharmacy benefit under the HMO plan being fully insured. It's not through the other vendor that you have for the OEP and other options that are available. So we do that under our program, and our overall increase was less than 1% for this year.
Yes, Senator Steven.
Just one question. If the governor's plan to eliminate step therapy, I think that was House Bill 5395, if that's implemented and takes that away from you, is there an idea of what that estimated cost is going to be, or where do you see that being a problem if they take that tool away from you?
I personally am not aware of that cost, but we're happy to follow up with you on that with our actuaries.
Okay. If you could, if all three of you could get us an idea of what the impact would be by taking that tool away from you, what that would be an interesting number. And if we could get that sooner than later, would be helpful. Thank you.
Other questions? If not, prepared for a motion to renew the contracts from both all the groups we've heard. Senator Severson moves. We approve the contracts, the renewed contracts. Give me a second on that. Yeah, we're going to put you to work. If you'd please read those motions.
Motion number one, pursuant to 5 ILCS 375-5, I make the motion to approve the proposed renewal version of the following contract for FY 2025, TELUS Health.
Is there any discussion on that? All those in favor, vote aye. Take the roll.
Aye.
Senator Aquino. Representative Davidsmeyer?
Aye.
Senator DeWitt?
Yes.
Representative Harper? Representative Hernandez? Senator Kaler?
Yes.
Representative McLaughlin? Representative Moeller? Senator Sims?
Aye.
Representative Sosnowski? Senator Stoller? Senator Severson?
Aye.
7 yes.
And the motion carries. Second motion?
Second motion, pursuant to 5 ILCS 375-5, make the motion to approve the proposed renewal versions for the following managed care contracts for FY 25 Blue Cross, Blue Advantage HMO, Blue Cross HMO of Illinois, Health Alliance HMO, and Aetna HMO.
Is there any discussion? If not, please take the roll.
Senator Aquino?
Aye.
Representative Davidsmeyer?
Yes.
Senator DeWitt?
Yes.
Representative Harper? Representative Hernandez?
Yes.
Senator Kaler?
Yes.
Representative McLaughlin? Representative Moeller? Senator Sims?
Aye.
Representative Sosnowski? Senator Stoller? Senator Severson? 7 yes.
And the motion is approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to see you. We're now going to have next panel, ongoing contracts for FY 2025. We have the OAPs, Blue Cross Blue Shield, HealthLink, and Aetna. So is there any addition to our table here? And please introduce yourself, and then go ahead and you can begin in whatever order you want.
Hello, I'm Stephanie Berner with HealthLink.
My name's Elizabeth Trakas with HealthLink.
Would you like to make any kind of a statement before we ask for questions?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today. HealthLink is a regional network in Missouri and Illinois, and we have the privilege of serving over 60,000 members for the state. We've been partners for over 20 years, and again, just want to thank you for having us here today.
Any questions?
That was pretty short and sweet.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll go to the next panel. We'll talk about the QCHP, Aetna, and I guess you're alone on this one.
Yeah.
Would you like to make any statement on that, or just open it up for questions?
Just open it up for questions.
Okay. Is there any questions from the committee? That was easy. Medicaid Advantage plans. That's Aetna again, the PPO plan. Any questions on that? Yeah. Do you have a question?
Sure. When the federal CMS numbers come out this year, we know those numbers are going to be going up. Is there going to be any changes in cost or either by the employee or by the state? Is there going to be any incurred changes to that?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Andrew Rudiger.
Yeah.
VP within Aetna Group Retiree. Been there for 4 years. As mentioned earlier, we should have a better indication on that as we get into late July or early August of a better understanding of what, if any, financial impact may hit us.
Is there an anticipated idea of what potentially could occur?
I mean, there's actuarial models, but until what's called the national bid average comes out, we really do not know what the impact looks like.
Okay. And if it does occur, then how do we respond as a state? Do we just have to ride that out then until the next fiscal year, or how is that?
Yeah, that's actually something that we're partnering with CMS on right now to try to anticipate what any changes may be and try to offset any financial impacts to the state.
Okay. And we currently just have the we only offer the Advantage plan to our retirees. We don't have a optional supplemental plan offering to them. That's correct.
That's correct.
Has that ever been looked at as a potential option? Have there been any modeling for that at all to see even if that was bore by the employee, the cost differential, has that been looked at or modeled at all?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. Would you be opposed to doing a model for that to share with this body?
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly take that back and provide details through CMS to this body.
Would Aetna have any opposition to that as a potential?
Aetna doesn't currently have a group med sub plan.
They do, yeah. But currently, we just offer the Advantage plan, though. We don't offer the other.
Sorry, I'm saying Aetna does not currently have one.
They don't?
We don't have the ability to offer one.
Oh, you don't have the ability to offer that.
Correct.
You offer it individually, but not as a group plan.
That is correct.
Okay. So under your contract, you couldn't offer that, and you have a multi-year contract?
That's correct.
So as a state, we don't even have, so our hands are tied. We could not offer a supplemental plan in Illinois then.
I mean, I'll never say never to anything like that.
But you don't offer it.
Correct.
And we have a multi-year contract, so we can't unless we change your contract.
That's right.
You wouldn't allow us offering a supplemental option.
That's correct.
Okay. So our retirees are left with just an Advantage plan as opposed to a supplemental option.
Correct, and that's correct.
Okay. All right. Now, obviously, there's a significant difference in coverages for when you have a supplement versus the Advantage plan when it comes to networks and utilization, and so it's a big difference. So how long is our current contract with you?
It is currently the remaining of this year and then three additional years beyond that. So that is...
So we have another 3 years, so we have...
27.
Okay. So, but at least another three more years that we can only offer an advantage plan only for state retirees for the next 3 years, then?
Based on our current setup, that is correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Welcome, thank you.
This would be a more appropriate time for me to ask my question about the noise that we were hearing over a year ago, and I presume it's because the issues have been resolved, network issues, any changes in the plan. So thank you for that, but would you care to comment?
No, I mean, I would just say that we're seeing the same thing on our side. Just as we see grievances and complaints, they follow sort of the normal trajectory of the rest of our book of business. We did an initial survey 4 months into launch where member sat was around 80%, and the most recent survey we did was at 91%. So, again, everything seems to be trending in the right direction.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Welcome.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
And our final panel, other providers, CVS Caremark, Delta Dental, ComPsych, iMed, and MetLife. I don't know if we have enough chairs up here, but... I guess this is bring your own chair. So we'll have to pass the microphone around. But maybe we'll just start at one end and work our way down. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here. I am a senior vice president with Delta Dental of Illinois. My name is Karen Glagowski. We have been serving the state of Illinois employees with their dental plans since July of 2011.
Good morning. My name is Stacey Morimoto. I am an account manager with ComPsych, and we are the current provider of the Employee Assistance Program.
Good morning. I'm Rick Edwards. I'm the executive director with CVS Caremark. We're the pharmacy benefit manager for the State of Illinois Employee Program, and we've been serving in that capacity since 2015.
Darren Avant with Delta of Illinois. I'm an account manager and have been working with the State of Illinois account since inception.
Good morning. I'm Amy Donahue. I'm the Assistant Vice President of Service for MetLife, and we provide life insurance benefits for the State of Illinois since July of 2021.
Good morning. I'm John Nicolay. I'm local counsel for iMed. We've been providing eye insurance services for the state since 2005.
What questions of the committee?
Sure. Maybe first on dental. Not as dramatic as what's happening with some of the other lines, but I noticed that the... both CMS and CAGFA have higher estimated increases than what the national trend is. Do you have some thoughts on what is causing that potential higher utilization versus national trends?
Just for clarification, are you speaking about the admin fees or claim costs?
I guess overall healthcare costs. I know on page 5 of the, it talks about the trend of dental costs being higher than the national trend. Have we seen any spike in our overall dental costs, or any reason for that, or is it just normal utilization increases?
just normal utilization increases. And we're seeing more activity, of course, coming off of COVID. So we're seeing more claims coming through. So we're seeing increased costs for those reasons.
And I don't have the breakdown here, but of in-network versus out-of-network, is the utilization of in-network comparable to what we see in other states with the network?
What we're seeing with the state of Illinois population is 71% in-network utilization, which is better than most other carriers. Delta has both networks, the PPO and the Premier, and it provides more tools and advantages for members because the network is broader.
Okay. And the Premier is going to pay, it doesn't pay this as good. I mean, the employee pays more under the Premier than they do the PPO, right?
That is correct. But with the Premier network, those providers typically resist joining PPO networks. So it's a better advantage for members because at least those dentists are in work with Delta Dental. So it's an additional advantage being with Delta.
So the employee gets the biggest savings in the PPO, but when they go to the Premier, even though they're still considered in-network, Premier still, they pay a higher cost than they would if they were in the PPO.
Correct.
And how does a Premier cost out of pocket compare to the non-network costs out of pocket? Is there a differential between those two?
There is. In terms of individuals seeing a Premier dentist, the average discount is maybe about 15% to 20%. And of course, dentists outside the network, there are no discounts at all. So members do realize some savings seeing a PPO versus a non-network dentist.
And what does the state use for their utilization review? Is it their utilization payment? Is it usual and customary at 80%, 85%, or do you know what their participation is?
Yeah, for out-of-network, the state uses a fee schedule, so it's a flat dollar amount. So any member seeing a non-network dentist, there's a set dollar amount that would be reimbursed for that service seeing a non-network dentist.
And that fee schedule, what does that translate to usual and customary?
I can't say exactly. I know that our actuaries look at the data in the Springfield area as a basis for determining what those amounts would be, but I can't say offhand. We would have to get back to you with that.
Okay. If you could, I'd appreciate that. I think in the private sector, I think you guys are normally at around 80% usual and customary, which is a pretty low number compared to other dental plans, but it'd be interesting to know how many use PPO versus the Premier or out of network. So if we can get that utilization numbers, that would be helpful. So
sure.
I guess same question on vision. It looks like our vision costs are well below the national trend. Is there a reason for our costs being less? It looks like there's potential reduction in cost, actually.
As to the reasons why, Senator, I don't know the answer to that, but I would be happy to get you that. That's a good piece of good news, so I'm happy to get you an answer on why that's occurring.
Okay. And I didn't get a chance to get back to you, but yeah, if we could find that out, if what's driving the potential lower cost, if it's less utilization or if it's just higher out-of-pocket costs borne by the employee versus the employer, that would be helpful. As we talked about last year, most of our vision carriers tell us if we get a coupon out of a newspaper, we'll do better than using the state's insurance. And so that could be one of the reasons why it's those costs are down. And that wouldn't be your problem. It's just the way the state has negotiated it. But with the discounts being low and the copays being very high, employees don't get much benefit under the vision plan compared to what in the private sector you get for a plan. This is pretty crappy coverage compared to others.
I will have an answer for that by the end of the day.
So, yeah, I know you bet you do. So, okay. Yeah, if you can get that again, that's nothing against IMED. That's sure. Just the way the plan was designed, but it's not. That's one that is really pretty poor coverage for Illinois. So
happy to
that would be great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question I have for Delta Dental. Do you see a correlation between the number of checkups that, you know, we have two free checkups per year where we have cleaning and usually x-rays taken on a periodic basis. Do you see a correlation between people using that and having less expensive dental work done down the road?
So there is absolutely a correlation between people that use the dental plan that they, on average, cost the state less money than the employees that don't get routine visits. As of July 1st of this year, you also implemented a program and approved called the Enhanced Benefit Program. So it ties overall health to dental health. And what that means is for people with certain conditions, such as diabetes, pregnancy, we know from a scientific clinical perspective that they will have health benefits for getting more than the two cleanings a year. So those folks are authorized up to four cleanings for most of the conditions. There is not a physician's note or anything that needs to be authorized. The doctor calls in, or the dentist office calls in, or the member calls in and says, I'm a diabetic. They are automatically enrolled real time to be eligible for extra cleanings.
And do you know what percentage of your covered lives take advantage of the two free cleanings? Do you know what percentage of your members that you cover actually use that? Yeah, actually have the two cleanings.
How many even use one cleaning?
Yeah, the reason I'm asking this is that years ago when I helped negotiate a labor contract with city and its unions, the labor management group actually planned their own design. And one of the things they said is that it costs us all as members when people don't take care of their teeth. And so they said you get two free cleanings, and if you don't use them, then your health, your costs increase. And it's just a way of promoting prevention, because and I think we need to do that kind of across the board, is that let's encourage all of our employees, all the members, to make sure that they take advantage of all the, you know, the incentives out there to improve health. So, you need to turn your mic on.
We do have banner ads, and we have a lot of collateral that the state has used in the past. So when we look at the number of state employees that actually didn't go to the dentist in the last 12 months, we initiated a marketing campaign that basically said, if you ignore your teeth, they'll just go away. And we were able to get an increase in the utilization.
Yeah, good. I learned that you floss only the ones you want to keep. So, any other questions? Thank you very much. So that brings us to the end of our agenda. Any questions, comments for the good of the order? All right, we stand adjourned.